Why Read Church History? J. Philip Arthur, Banner of Truth, 2015, 23 pages. Reviewed by Michael Haken. Among the most precious resources that Christians have to help them as travelers through their time in this world is the history of past ages, especially the story of God's people. It was with this in mind that the 18th century Baptist pastor theologian Caleb Evans, 1737 to 1791, rightly admonished readers of his day, "Every Christian ought to be a good historian." Given my own conviction of the importance of employing this resource in the living of the Christian life, I turned to this new Banner of Truth booklet with a sense of anticipation of finding an arsenal of good reasons for reading the history of the church. I was not disappointed, but I do have a specific concern that will be mentioned in due course. Wrong ways to read the past. Phil Arthur, pastor of Grace Baptist Church in Lancaster, England, helpfully opens with a brief personal account of the way that history has always been one of the great loves of his life, page 3. He goes on to note that the Bible itself strongly encourages us to read history. See, for example, Joshua 4, 21 and 22, and 1 Corinthians 10, 11. And in fact, points out one way in which the past is to be read, namely, not uncritically. As Arthur observes, it is fatally easy to develop an uncritical admiration for our heroes, page 5. Consider, for instance, Augustine. There is so much good that the modern church owes to Augustine, but his thought and legacy are not without their problems, and here Arthur notes Augustine's advocacy of the state's involvement in enforcing biblical orthodoxy, pages 6 and 7. The perspectives of the North African theologian on suicide and aspects of human sexuality could also have been cited in this regard. Other wrong ways of reading history include the romantic desire to escape into the past, since it is more attractive and congenial than the present, page 8, making past days the benchmark by which to judge the present, pages 8 and 9. In a way, this is to place church history on a par with Scripture, and conversely, the hubristic judging of the past by the present, pages 9 and 10, probably the greatest danger of our politically correct day. Then, there is the danger of missing the wood for the trees, so to speak, getting so absorbed by the human drama of history and failing to see God at work in the past, pages 10 and 17. Finally, there is the attitude that is so pervasive in our day, rejecting the study of history out of hand as if it has nothing to really teach us, pages 10 and 11. Tracing the footsteps of God. Arthur then provides a variety of reasons why history does indeed need to be read. First, it deepens humility as we are exposed to the remarkable achievements of our predecessors, pages 11 and 17. Arthur could have mentioned our indebtedness to those who have gone before us here, for it can accomplish the same end. Some of the figures he is thinking of here are mentioned further on in the pamphlet: the 16th century reformers and the Puritans, page 15, and great saints like William Carey and Martin Luther, Samuel Rutherford, C.H. Spurgeon, and John Newton, page 16. And then studying history undermines the idea that error is original, pages 11 and 12 and 17, and makes us wise in the face of current folly, pages 12 and 13. It helps to produce tolerance in Catholicity, pages 13 and 14. As Arthur rightly puts it, a good test for a British Calvinist, in fact, any Calvinist for that matter, is whether he has a place in his heart for that consecrated and zealous Arminian John Wesley, page 13. It can force us to confront realistically the present. A patient examination of the way God has moved in reviving power in the history of the English-speaking peoples, Arthur avers, can have a very sobering effect on modern claims about church health and growth, page 14. And study of the past is vital in understanding why the present is what it is, page 17. Arthur notes the commonplace saying that the past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. This insightful statement actually occurs as the opening lines in a novel by L.P. Hartley, Not a Work of History, page 14. But he does not follow it up by observing how this impinges on his earlier recommendation about tracing the footsteps of God, page 10. To trace God's work in the past is not always that easy, for, if Hartley is right, and it seems to me that he is, then we are often confronted by the fact that previous generations of believers thought differently on some matters than we do. This is salutary, for it helps to dispel undue dogmatism about non-primary issues. What to read? In the final section of this booklet, Arthur rightly seeks to answer his question, "But where should we begin in studying history?" page 17. He mentions two overviews of church history, S.M. Houghton's Sketches of Church History and Nick Needham's 2,000 Years of Christ's Power, as well as a few biographies, Brian Edwards' story of William Tyndale, Arthur Dallimore's influential two-volume biography of George Whitefield, and Ian Murray's equally important work on Martin Lloyd-Jones, the excellent travel guides produced by Day One. Here he instances the ones that touch on the lives of John Knox, Spurgeon, Thomas Cranmer, Lloyd-Jones, J.C. Ryle, and the Marian Martyrs, and Evangelical Press's series of bite-sized biographies, pages 8 through 21. A specific list of titles is then provided at the very end of the booklet, pages 22 and 23, that rounds out this discussion. It is here, in this application of the advice and reasons given to read church history, that a specific problem surfaces. I can best get at it by citing a comment from Jane Austen's novel Northanger Abbey, where the heroine Catherine Morland states that history tells me nothing that does not either vex or weary me. Reading through Arthur's plea for reading church history, I saw nary an explicit mention of any Christians of the female gender. The beautifully designed cover with four panels from the history of the church only reinforces this observation. They illustrate Paul on Mars Hill, Luther nailing the 95 Theses to the church door at Wittenberg, Whitefield preaching in the open air at Moorfields, and a portrait of Spurgeon. Four men, and four preachers at that. One of the great dangers of the present day, our gender-dominated world, is for evangelicals to overreact to the spirit of the day and forget that women have played a critical role in the history of the church, from the women of Romans 16 to remarkable Christian women of our day like Elizabeth Elliot and Edith Schaefer. The rise of the feminist movement, which can be really traced back to Enlightenment figures like Mary Wollstonecraft, has forced historians, and rightly so, to take stock of the contribution of women to history, and Christian historians should not be exempt from this task. This caveat aside, though, this is a fine introduction to the importance and value of church history, one that I plan on using in my introductory church history courses. Caleb Evans' plea for his generation of believers to read history has found a worthy modern-day advocate in this small booklet. Michael A.G. Haken is professor of church history and Christian spirituality at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and he is review editor for Church History here at Books at a Glance.